You want to go to heaven, don't you, Sammy? Oh, we're moving to heaven.
Samuel made two fists.
I hate it when you talk stupid like that. You think it's cool, but it isn't. It's sick.
Daniel tossed the rope at the wall. He snorted again.
I'm going to tell the new mum about Ikey,
Samuel said, showing unusual courage. He knew he'd soon back down.
Then she won't take us.
Daniel swung around and leaped to his feet in a quick, graceful motion. He flashed Samuel a grin as he pushed past him and strode out of the little shack onto the grassy approach to the beach.
Where are you going?
Samuel turned to follow him.
I'm going to explain to Ikey,
Daniel replied without turning back.
Explain to him? But wait.
Daniel trotted to the sand. Samuel could see Ikey sitting hunched at the end of the short dock in a beam of sunlight, feet hanging over the side, fishing pole dangling beside him. Ikey smiled and waved as Daniel approached.
Wait, Daniel.
Samuel sighed. He walked inside the shack and slumped to the damp floor. He scratched the sleeve of the starchy t-shirt. Mum seemed nice. She was pretty with that straight black hair and the shiny dark eyes, almost like a movie star. But if all the t-shirts were this scratchy, it wouldn't be heaven. At least their new home was near water. The ocean and the bay, Mum had said. The place was called Long Island. That was good. Samuel had always lived on an island. Maybe it would feel like home right away. What did that mean? Feel like home. He'd never had a home. He'd never had parents. At least not parents he could remember. Daniel was kind of his parent, even though they were the same age. Thinking this gave Samuel a bad feeling in his stomach. What kind of parent was Daniel? Very bad. Samuel heard a short cry and a splash outside.
Oh no, please no.
A few seconds passed. Samuel sat up as Daniel strode back into the shack. He ducked his head under the fishing nets and dropped onto the cot. His face was a total blank, eyes dull and lips pressed tightly together.
What about Ikey?
Samuel's voice came out shrill and tight.
Did you explain? Or did you tell him?
Don't worry about it,
Daniel said, without any emotion.
But what did you say? What did you tell him?
Daniel shrugged. That strange smile played over his face again.
No more Ikey, he said.
His mouth did a strange quiver, like a tick.
Huh? No more Ikey? What do you mean?
Daniel's smile grew wider.
No worries.
But Daniel...
Samuel couldn't find the words.
No more Ikey,
Daniel repeated in a sing-song. Samuel peered out the doorway to the dock. The dock was empty now. No boy sitting at the end. No fishing pole.
No more Ikey, Daniel said. So no worries.
Come on, brother.
He jumped up and, putting a hand on Samuel's shoulder, guided him outside.
Big smiles now, come on. Sweet smiles, sweet. Big-sighted lad. Let's go tell our new mum how excited we are.
Part 2 Chapter 17
Here he was at the Bay Street Theater, just across from the bay in Sag Harbor, Andy Pavano and Vince's cousin Cora, in town from Bath, a little town in Maine, where she waitressed at a barbecue restaurant and took classes at Bowdoin, studying for a degree in social work. Andy got all that info in the first 5 minutes when he picked her up at Vince's house and drove into town on a foggy, drizzly Saturday night. She talked quickly, with a slight Maine accent he hadn't heard much before, and kept tapping his shoulder as she talked, as if trying to keep his attention. Cora wasn't bad-looking. She had sort of a bird-beak nose, but her eyes were round and pretty. She had the kind of smile that showed her gums, a toothy smile Andy liked. She was small and girlish, except for her truck driver laugh, he thought. But maybe she just laughed like that because she was nervous. She said she'd never been out with a cop before.
It's not really a date, he said. Vince just thought we'd have fun together.
Then he felt like a total dork for saying that. He could feel his face grow hot, but she didn't seem to notice. She had to be 5 or 10 years younger than him. 30, maybe? She dressed young, like a college girl, in black tights and a purple square-necked top that gathered at her waist and came down low like a skirt. She didn't have much on top, he noticed. Her dark hair was short and layered. Andy parked on the pier, and they walked past a little lobster shack, closed for the night, and B. Smith's, a large, bustling restaurant overlooking the bay. A crowd stood at the entrance, waiting for the outdoor tables. Enormous white yachts lined the pier along the side of the restaurant. The aroma of barbecued chicken floated out from B. Smith's kitchen, and Cora made a face. "Don't take me near a barbecue place. Sometimes after I've been at work in the restaurant, I have to shampoo 3 times to get the smoke out of my hair. Dogs follow me home because I smell like pulled pork." Andy laughed. She had a good sense of humor about herself.
"You and Cora should hit it off," Vincent said the night before. "You're both intellectuals."
That's how he said it, pronouncing every syllable. Was he being sarcastic? Probably. Andy had told him he liked to read mystery novels and police procedurals, and Vince had teased him ever since, calling him Sherlock and telling him he should smoke a pipe. Vince wasn't a Neanderthal, but he pretended to be. He thought it was part of his role as a small-town desk cop. Cora seemed to think she had to tell everything there was to know about her before they got to the theater. Maybe she just had a thing about silences. Andy knew he wasn't keeping up his end, but it was hard to get a word in, and he was getting to like her soft schoolgirl voice. She'd had a long affair with a guy in Bath she met at the barbecue restaurant. He said he was in the music business and seemed to know a lot about music clubs and new acts, but it turned out he sold jukeboxes and pinball machines, and he was married. After she broke it off with him, he stalked her for a while, sitting outside the restaurant in his car and phoning her again and again, leaving threatening messages and muttering obscenities. When she changed her phone number, he finally went away.
"Did you call the police on him?"
She shook her head.
"I didn't think they'd do anything. Usually the police don't do anything in stalker cases till a woman is raped or stabbed in the chest."
"Usually," Andy agreed. "But sometimes a couple of cops can go to the guy's house and, you know, reason with him a little." Andy waved a fist. Cora stopped outside the theater.
"Have you ever done that?"
Andy stared at her. "Well, no, but I saw it on Law and Order." They both laughed. The play was called Whodunit. Cora accused him of only having one interest in life.
"Do you only go to plays about cops and crime?"
"I don't go to many plays." The play wasn't great. It was supposed to be a comedy, but people weren't laughing. The mystery was impossible to solve. The murderer could have been any one of the 6 people on stage. And he hated stories like that, where he didn't stand a chance of figuring it out. The culprit could even be the nearsighted police inspector hamming it up on the old-fashioned living room set. Cora seemed to be enjoying it more than he was. She kept squeezing his arm every time something surprising took place. She laughed when the police inspector stepped on his eyeglasses and stumbled blindly over the tea cozy. At intermission, Andy led Cora through the chattering crowd, out the doors to the walled terrace in front of the theater. Horns honked as traffic rolled by. The air smelled tangy, salty as the sea. He was about to ask her if she wanted to skip the second act and go get a bite to eat, when he saw Sari walking out of the theater. Something pinged in his chest, a real physical feeling, like a hard heart thump or an alarm going off. Cora was saying something, tapping his shoulder, but he didn't hear her. He heard a rushing sound in his ears like water washing over a steep waterfall. How could Sari still have this effect on him? She wore a short, white tank dress that clung to her body, showing off her long legs and her trim waist. Her black hair fell loosely behind her shoulders. And who was the guy she was arm in arm with? Was he the guy? That shrimp. He was at least a head shorter than Sari, wearing a geeky black and white wide-striped shirt like a referee wears and white chinos torn at one knee, and a rope belt, some kind of gold necklace hanging in front of his chest, and a tennis hat. The fucking guy wore a tennis hat with the name of his store on the front to the theater. Andy lurched toward them. He saw Cora reach for him with both hands, startled by his sudden escape. But he wasn't moving on brain power. This was some kind of weird primitive force propelling him, the rushing waterfall in his ears sweeping him away.
Andy?
Sari let go of the shrimpy guy, her dark eyes flashing surprise. Andy nearly knocked over the tall sign announcing whodunit with photos of the cast. He caught his balance and took her by the elbow. The shrimp peered out from under his tennis cap, eyes wide with surprise. He had freckles and a wide, innocent face. Reminded Andy of someone from an Archie comic book.
"I need to speak to Sari," Andy explained to him.
He expected more of a reaction, but the guy just shrugged and flicked his eyes toward Sari. She didn't resist as Andy pulled her away to the side of the theater. A few people turned to watch. He glimpsed Cora behind him, arms crossed now, following him with her eyes till he disappeared around the corner. Sari giggled.
"Are you crazy? We have to go back."
He backed her against the wall. Her skin felt soft and warm. Her eyes glowed even in the darkness here. He felt a rush of feeling, so powerful he had to take a deep breath. She had hurt him so much the first time, caused him so many feelings he didn't know he had. And now, here they were again. Here he was, feeling this insane rush of emotion, leading him... where?
"Andy, you look funny. What is your problem?
You don't have anything to say to me?
Do you? We have to..."
"I'm back," he said. And then he was kissing her. Kissing her. And she was kissing him back. And he felt the electric tingle of her fingers on the back of his neck.
Just that light touch could make his head explode, he realized. He kissed her harder. She wasn't resisting. When the kiss ended, they stared dumbly at each other. Her hands slid off his neck. With a shiver of her shoulders, she slithered out from behind him in the wall. A long silence. Yes, his heart was pounding. And yes, the blood was throbbing, pulsing in his temples. But he didn't hear it now. Silence. Silence. And then she shook her head, sending her hair flying loose. She slowly rubbed a finger over her lips, as if wiping off the kiss.
"That didn't mean anything," she murmured. "Hear me?"
Then she grabbed his head, pulled his face close, and kissed him again. Chapter 18. Andy didn't hear much of the second act. He was aware of Cora squeezing his arm a few times. Was she trying to snap him back to reality? He didn't want to go back. He could still smell Sari's perfume, like oranges, sweet oranges. He could still feel the silvery touch of her fingers on the back of his neck, the whisper of her hair falling over his cheeks. Cora turned slightly away from him, eyes straight ahead, her lips pursed. She clasped her hands tightly in her lap. She was giving up. The characters moved across the stage, making broad hand gestures, shouting accusations at each other. After the second kiss, Sari had repeated her warning. "That didn't mean anything, Andy. Please believe me." Then she turned away with a funny short sigh and went running back to the shrimp. When he saw her grab the guy's hands and lean down to kiss him on the cheek, Andy had some evil thoughts. Maybe arrest him for being unsightly. Then beat the guy to death with one of those new titanium tennis rackets. It wasn't the first time he had thought of using his profession to settle a score or right a personal wrong, but of course he had never done anything like that. He was a good person, and a good cop. A few free counter lunches were the only perks he had ever allowed himself. He couldn't help it if his brain got overheated every once in a while. You can control your actions, but not your thoughts. And yes, he had violent thoughts. But the most violent moment of his life? It was back in the living room of the little two-family house in Forest Hills when his father, after too many Budweisers, for a change, settled an argument by punching his mother in the jaw. And Andy, maybe 17 at the time, had grabbed the old man by the shoulders and shoved him hard, sent him staggering headfirst into the stone mantel. He could still hear the smack of his dad's bald head, the gasp of surprise, see the darkening line of blood on his forehead. He'd expected the old man to spin around and come snarling back at him, but instead he coiled his body, curled into a cowering position against the flowered wallpaper. To his shock, Andy realized his father was afraid of him. It should have changed everything, but it didn't. Anthony Pavano was a bully. His son Andy wasn't. Then Andy did 12 years as a New York City cop. Nothing as violent as that impulsive moment. And why was he thinking of it now in this theater with people laughing all around him? On stage, the nearsighted inspector was interviewing a coat rack. Andy glanced around, searching for Sari, but he couldn't locate her in the dark. He really needed a smoke. He could feel the pack of Camels in his jacket pocket. Cora probably wouldn't approve. Who was Cora? He had to remind himself. The play ended finally. Yes, the nearsighted inspector had committed the murder, but he was too nearsighted to realize it. At the end, he arrested himself. Andy climbed to his feet and started to follow Cora across the aisle toward the exit.
Very clever, a woman said behind him.
Too clever, the man with her said.
Did you guess the ending?
Yes, about an hour ago, but I still enjoyed it. It's one of his lesser works. All of his plays are lesser works. Into the cool night air, a chatter of voices as people hurried to their cars. Cora walked along the sidewalk toward the pier till they were away from the crowd, then turned back to him.
It wasn't very good, was it?
Said with a shrug and a sad smile.
I don't think I laughed, he said.
His eyes were over her shoulder, searching for Sari.
How had she disappeared? He just wanted a glimpse of her. It was supposed to be sophisticated, she said, but the actors camped it up too much, don't you think? If they played it sincere...
He didn't want to discuss the play. He wanted to catch one more look at Sari and have a slow, soothing smoke. He wanted to burn his throat and let the smoke make his eyes water.
No, he didn't know what he wanted.
But when he heard the shrill shouts, he suddenly snapped alert. He turned toward the cries.
From the pier?
He spun away from Cora and took off running. Chapter 19. He heard shouts for help, shrill cries, and in the circle of light from a tall street lamp, saw a small group of people wrestling against the side of the darkened lobster shack. He didn't realize they were children until he was a few feet from them.
Stop! Police! He boomed.
He stepped in something soft. Glancing down, he saw a smashed ice cream cone on the pavement beneath his shoe. Another cone lay near it, ice cream still round at the top.
You dumb shit! You dumb shit! You pay me back!
A blonde-haired boy in a blue Southampton sweatshirt was screeching. A big dark-haired kid nearly twice his size had him by the front of the sweatshirt and swung a meaty fist above the boy's face.
Shut up! Shut the fuck up, liar!
Two or three other kids stood back a few feet and watched. They were all shouting angrily at the big guy. Not even teenagers, Andy realized. Their voices hadn't changed.
You fuck! You pay me for that cone! You want a cone? I'll shove it up your ass! You think I can't? You want to dare me?
Kids. The big kid started to lower his fist to the smaller boy's midsection. Andy stepped between them and absorbed most of the blow on his side. The kid had a pretty good punch.
Break it up, police!
He grabbed the big kid by the shoulders of his gray hoodie and pushed him backward.
Get off me, asshole! You don't look like no police!
Sag Harbor police, Andy said, as if that would convince the kid.
What's the fight about?
The blonde-haired boy pointed to the asphalt.
My ice cream cone! He tried to take it! Liar!
The big kid screamed. He lunged at the smaller guy again, and he caught him and stood him up.
Ethan is telling the truth, a girl cried.
The others joined in agreement.
You're Ethan?
Andy asked. The blonde kid nodded. He had tears in his eyes. He brushed back his straight blonde hair with one hand. His whole body was trembling. Andy saw he was struggling with all his might not to burst out sobbing.
And what's your name?
Andy asked the other kid. No reply. Instead, a sullen stare.
Derek Saltzman, the girl said. He knocked down my cone, too.
I'll knock you down, too, Derek told her. You're not going to knock anyone down, Andy growled. What's your problem?
Derek is mean, the girl said. He's always picking fights. He's always stealing our stuff,
Ethan said in a trembling voice.
Fucking liars,
Derek muttered. Nice language, Andy said. How old are you?
Old enough,
the kid muttered, still offering up the surly glare. He has a face like a bulldog, Andy thought, and a personality to match.
He's 12,
the girl offered.
And how old are you?
Andy asked Ethan. Ethan took a step back. He didn't take his eyes off Derek.
I'm 12, too.
Cora stepped up beside Andy.
What's going on?
Kids fighting, he told her, over ice cream.
I didn't take their ice cream, Derek snarled, his fat cheeks puffed in and out like a blowfish. They're total liars.
Andy noticed he cleaned up his language with a woman present.
Then how did the cones end up on the pavement? Andy asked.
Derek shrugged.
They dropped them. Liar!
Cora squinted at them.
Why are you kids all alone out here? It's 10 o'clock at night.
Before anyone could answer, hurried footsteps clicked over the asphalt. Andy turned to see a red-haired woman running awkwardly toward them on high spiked heels. She was tall and lean and had a white jacket tied around her shoulders, which flared behind her like a cape as she ran. Gold bracelets jangled up and down one arm.
Derek! She called breathlessly. What's going on?
She stopped a few feet from Andy and Cora and eyed him suspiciously.
Who are you? Is there a problem?
I'm a police officer, Andy started.
Police? What did he do? Who are these kids?
Her voice was throaty, hoarse, a smoker's voice. It rose with each question. Her chest heaved up and down beneath her violet sweater. The bracelets matched a gold chain with a jeweled heart that hung from her neck.
I didn't do anything,
Derek said, jutting his fleshy jaw out defiantly.
Is he your son?
Andy asked. She nodded. Then she brushed a strand of coppery hair off her forehead.
Yes, Derek Saltzman. He's my son. I'm Elaine Saltzman. I left him for 10 minutes by the ice cream store.
She pointed toward the end of the pier.
Well, these kids say your son tried to take away their ice cream. I think there was some kind of scuffle.
Liars!
Derek shouted.
We're not lying!
Mrs. Saltzman squinted at Ethan, seeing him for the first time.
I know you. You're Ethan, right?
She turned back to Andy.
He's in my son's class. What happened, Ethan?
Derek lurched forward. He raised both hands as if to give his mother a shove.
Why do you ask him? Why don't you ask me?
In a whining voice that made Andy want to cover his ears. He glanced at Cora. Her eyes were on one of the tall white yachts at Pierside. Three people had come onto the deck to watch the confrontation.
Bet Cora's impressed seeing a cop in action, Andy thought wryly. Spilled ice cream. It's a felony in this town. Huh. Wait till I slip the cuffs on the kid, she'll be all over me.
Derek tried to take our cones, Ethan reported. When we said no, he knocked them to the ground. Stupid liar! They knocked my ice cream to the ground!
Mrs. Saltzman stared down at her red-faced son.
Are you telling the truth?
She didn't wait for him to answer. She wrapped her hand around Andy's arm and led him across the pier. She waited for an SUV to pass, then pulled him to the side of a parked car out of her son's hearing.
Derek has problems, she murmured, fingers still tight around Andy's sleeve.
She leaned against him and brought her face close to his. He could smell her flowery perfume and a whiff of alcohol on her breath.
Ever since his father left, he's been angry, very troubled.
This was definitely more than Andy wanted to hear.
Mrs. Saltzman, I really have to be going. Why don't you just solve this thing by buying cones for all three kids?
She blinked. Did she expect him to get tough or something? She was still holding on to him. A strong breeze off the bay fluttered her hair.
Good. Okay, she said. I just wanted to explain. I mean, these days sometimes Derek acts out, but he's basically a good boy. He has a good head on his shoulders. A good head, really.
Of course, neither Andy nor Elaine Saltzman nor anyone on the pier that night had any idea of what would happen to Derek's head a few weeks later. Chapter 20.
My parents say we'll have a house in Malibu. That's where they are right now, in L.A., buying it. It's right on the ocean. See, you go out the back door and you're on the beach.
That's awesome, Ruth Ann. Can I come live with you? I mean, really?
It's like being on vacation all the time, only you live there. And there's celebrities all over the beach, you know, movie stars and TV, and you just hang out with them.
Do you think Johnny Depp could be your neighbor?
No way. He's too old. They don't let old people in Malibu.
The girls both laughed. They sat almost side by side on Ruth Ann's bed, talking and texting each other at the same time.
Dylan Sprouse? You like him?
I like the other one.
They could be your neighbors. You could hang with them, and they'd ask you to be on TV, and you'd be a star.
No way, Elena. I'm only 14. I don't want to be a star till I'm 16. That made them both laugh again.
Elena Sutter and Ruth Ann Glazer had been friends since third grade and best friends for 2 years since sixth grade, mainly since they shared the same sense of humor, although Ruth Ann was the real wit, sharp and sarcastic, and because they lived two houses down from each other and were in the same eighth grade class at Sag Harbor Middle School, and because they looked so much alike they could be sisters. They agreed that Ruth Ann looked like the older sister because she was at least 4 inches taller than Elena and already had the beginnings of a woman's body, meaning she had breasts, and wore her hair in a more sophisticated, layered look, which she acquired during one of her many trips with her parents to L.A. They were both pretty and smart and popular. They both had an easy way of getting along with other kids and of not getting in their own way when it came to success at school. They were both spoiled, but not in an obnoxious way. They knew how to get whatever they wanted from their parents and still allow their parents to think they were the ones in charge. Elena was a miniature 14-year-old version of Leah, her mother. Creamy white skin framed by straight black hair, serious dark eyes, a delicate face and a wiry body, perfect for the gymnastics classes that she was becoming more serious about. They tapped on their phones for a few minutes without speaking. Elena's phone bleeped. She squinted at the screen.
Ethan.
Ruth Ann lowered her phone.
Iris' friend Ethan? What's he want?
Elena shrugged.
Nothing. Just said sup.
She thumbed the keys rapidly. Another bleep.
He wants to come over. His PlayStation broke. Tell him no way. Tell him your brother Ira isn't here. He's at your house. Ethan pretends he wants to hang with Ira, then he just stares at you like a sad puppy dog.
Elena laughed.
He does look like a puppy dog.
The light from her phone gave her face a pale tint.
Hey, I'm not kidding about Malibu. Your parents would let me come with you, right? I mean, just for the summer, I mean.
Ruth Ann studied her friend.
You're joking. You're getting two new brothers, and you want to come live with me?
Elena scrunched up her face.
Why do I want two new brothers? Because they're hot? Show me that photo again.
She grabbed Elena's phone and began shuffling through photo screens. She stopped at the twins' photo and brought it close to her face. Elena grabbed it away from her.
You think they're cute? I think they're blonde freaks. You're messed up, Elena. They are totally hot. I mean, for 12-year-olds. Check out those smiles. Those dimples on this one's cheeks. What's his name? Danny? Adorable. They could be on TV. Really.
Elena stuck her finger down her throat and made a gagging sound. She squinted at the photo.
Daniel and Samuel. Wavy blonde hair, almost white, and those big blue eyes, wearing red t-shirts way too big for them, and those sick, sweet smiles. Like they're posing as angels, Elena said.
Where did that thought come from? Weird.
Where are they going to stay?
Ruth Ann studied the photo.
Are you changing rooms? They're not moving into the playroom downstairs, are they? No way. Dad fixed up the attic. He made it really awesome. He bought them a laptop and a TV, and he got them a Wii. He said they've had a tough life. He wants to make things nice for them. Tough life? No kidding. They lost both their parents, didn't they? And their house? And all their stuff?
Elena nodded.
I think Dad wants to write a book about them.
Ruth Ann handed the phone back to Elena.
For real? You know, my parents were talking about your dad's book. Did you read it?
Not really, just kind of looked at it.
Mom said the book says parents should let kids do whatever they want. Just let them be free. My parents made jokes about it. They said it would make a great sitcom. Is that all your parents think about, sitcoms? Well, yeah. Their show is picked up for another year. All they talk about are jokes and scripts and stuff. Ruth Ann, do you watch it? Of course not. No way.
They both laughed. Elena twisted the phone in her hand.
My dad's book isn't true. He's stricter than your parents. I mean, he doesn't let Ira and me do what we want. I always have to trick Mom into letting me go places. Or Roz. Roz is the easiest because she's busy worrying about Axel.
I forgot about Axel. It's going to be crowded in your house, Elena. I mean, a mob. That's why I want to come to Malibu with you guys. How's Ira taking the new brothers thing? Is he freaking? Of course he's freaking. Ira freaks when his shoelace comes untied. Now you sound like my parents. They'd like that joke. They type it into their Blackberries right away. It's no joke. Poor kid is totally stressed already. I mean, he thinks sixth grade is really hard. Ruth Ann snickered. Wait till he gets to eighth. He hates his teacher, Miss Montgomery. Did you have Montgomery? No, I had Price, remember? Montgomery acts real nice. She's real pretty and she's very sweet, but she gives hours and hours of homework every night, and then she doesn't even collect it or go over it or anything. Ira says she just makes you do it. Ruth Ann snickered. Tell Ira to suck it up. Elena sighed. I think he really misses Mom and Dad when they're both away. Roz is great, but, you know. Elena's phone rang, startling her. She stared at the screen, but she didn't have to. She recognized her dad's ringtone. Hi, Dad. Oh, okay. Okay, I'm coming. Bye. She clicked the phone shut. It's my new brothers. They're here. I gotta go. She jumped to her feet and strode out of the room. She was making her way down the stairs when she heard Ruth Ann shout, Hey, Elena! Good luck!
Chapter 21 At LaGuardia Airport, Mark hugged Leah and held her close, wrapped her up like a prize that had almost been lost. He wanted to plant 100 kisses on her face. The strong emotion welled in him, taking him by surprise. He was usually so level, no tidal waves of feeling rocking his calm. But he let her go when he saw the two blonde creatures gazing at him. My new sons? Yes, they were beautiful boys. Their deep blue eyes were almost unreal, and Leah's description, angels, came pretty close to describing the sweetness, the innocence on their pale faces. So why didn't he feel some kind of immediate connection with them? The wave of emotion seemed to pull back, leaving him with an empty feeling as he stared at the boys over Leah's shoulder. He didn't want them here. He had argued with Leah almost until their plane had taken off, but he hoped that when he saw them, when he actually saw the two angels, he would fall for them the way Leah had, and his doubts and objections would fade away. What a disappointment that their hopeful blue-eyed stares only aroused a feeling of dread. And now, after the long drive to Sag Harbor, here they were in his house, about to meet his kids, about to join his family. Just like that, two strangers to take care of and worry about and love. The boys seemed really happy to be here, Mark thought. They haven't stopped smiling. Guiding them to the living room, Leah stood behind them, as if backing them up, or maybe blocking any retreat. Her expression was tense. Mark noticed her eyes were bloodshot. She had one hand lightly on Samuel's slender shoulder. Ira stood halfway up the stairs, his chin on the wooden banister. He stared down warily at the two boys, gripping the banister tightly with both hands, as if holding on for dear life. He's staring at them like they were circus freaks. I told Ira to give them a friendly welcome. Did he forget? Ira, come down and say hi to your new brothers. Mark motioned him down. Hi, he said, without budging from his perch. Ira, come down. Leah's voice sounded tight, shriller than usual. Can't you shake hands? Kids don't shake hands, Ira's reply. The twins gazed up at him with those sweet smiles on their faces. Their blue eyes appeared to glow, like jewels, Mark thought. They are extraordinary looking. He thought of beautifully crafted dolls, except they were so skinny, so gaunt. The red t-shirts and long white shorts hung on them like scarecrow clothes. Their flat white sneakers were as long as clown shoes. We've got to buy them clothes, then see about putting some meat on their bones. The twins stepped forward, almost in unison, and gazed around the living room.
How nice is this? Samuel said. We never had a couch.
He put a hand on the back of the green leather couch and squeezed it. Mark saw that,
When he removed his hand, he left a sweat stain on the leather. Daniel turned back to Ira on the stairs.
"Do you like to swim?"
Ira scrunched up his face, as if he had to think about it. "Not if the water's cold." Is he going to say anything friendly or positive? Guess it'll take time.
"Where do you like to swim?"
Daniel asked Ira, who was definitely trying to break the ice.
"In the bay or in the ocean?"
"My friend Ethan has a pool," Ira said, chin on the banister. He didn't move from behind the bars of the banister, safe in his cage up there. Roz came bursting into the room from the kitchen, holding Axel by one hand as the chubby, dark-haired boy toddled beside her. She wore a long blue denim sleeveless dress and was barefoot, as usual. Axel had a little sunburn on his arms. She had taken him to the bay beach this morning.
"Welcome, welcome!"
Roz threw her arms around Daniel and hugged him, then pulled his brother into a hug, as if they had known each other for years. Roz wasn't usually this demonstrative, but she had told Mark she planned to do all she could to welcome the boys into a warm home. Axel stuck out his stubby arms toward the twins, as if he wanted a hug too. To everyone's surprise, including Axel's, Samuel picked the two-year-old up in his arms and hugged him. Axel grabbed a fistful of the boy's blonde hair and tugged it hard. Samuel laughed and spun Axel around. His twin watched the whole thing with a dimpled smile. When Samuel returned Axel to the floor, Daniel pointed at the toddler.
"He's funny looking."
Roz's happy expression changed. "What did you say?"
"He's funny looking. His face makes me laugh."
Roz moved toward Axel as if she had to protect him. "He has a perfectly nice face, and his hair's coming in nice and curly."
"He's funny looking," Daniel repeated. "No lie."
Leah stepped toward him and spoke up.
"Sometimes it's better to say something nice," she said.
"Sometimes,"
Daniel's smile returned. He exchanged a quick glance with his brother.
"But the laddie looks like a chimpanzee, don't you know?"
"Pansy,"
Axel repeated. He giggled. He seemed to like the word.
"Pansy."
Roz started to say something but restrained herself.
"Well, I hope you boys like it here. Welcome to our family."
"We like it already,"
Samuel said.
"We never had a couch."
"Mark, show them their room," Leah said. But before Mark could move, the front door swung open, letting in a burst of warm sunshine, followed by Elena. She stopped at the door and called to the new arrivals.
"Hey, guys, you're here."
They turned and studied her. She swept into the room and shook hands with both of them at once.
"Oh, wow. How do I tell you apart?"
"On the smart one,"
Daniel said.
"He's the weird one,"
Samuel told her. "You can tell them by the dimples," Leah offered. "See? Daniel has those dimples on his cheek and Samuel doesn't."
"Weird,"
Elena said. She squinted at them. "Do you always dress alike?"
"Your mum bought us this,"
Daniel said, tugging at the baggy red t-shirt.
"We lost our clothes. We lost everything."
His voice cracked on the last word. He lowered his eyes.
"Don't worry."
Leah stepped up behind them and put a hand on each one's shoulder. "That's the first thing on my list. We'll go shopping and buy you all the clothes you need." They turned their heads and smiled up at her. Leah sighed.
"Oh, I'm just so happy you are both here. Look at me. I have tears in my eyes."
She walked over to Mark and pressed her face against the front of his shirt.
"Thank you," she whispered.
"Pansy,"
Axel offered. Daniel reached down and picked Axel up again. Axel poked his nose against Daniel's nose.
"Chimpanzee,"
Daniel said.
"Pansy,"
Axel repeated the word. Daniel lifted his eyes to Roz.
"Do you feed him lots and lots of bananas?"
Roz squinted at him.
"Excuse me?"
"You know, chimpanzee food."
Again, Mark saw Roz restrain herself.
"I guess I'll have to get used to your sense of humor, Daniel,"
Samuel snickered.
"Daniel doesn't have a sense of humor. He's just strange, don't you know?" "Chimpanzee,"
Daniel and Axel said in unison. Then they both giggled. Daniel turned back to Roz.
"He's my new pet."
Roz's mouth dropped open. Daniel twirled Axel above his head. Axel laughed.
Yes, boyo, you're my new pet. Gonna slip you lots and lots of peanuts. Pansy,
Axel repeated and tossed back his head and giggled. Look how sweet they are, Leo whispered, leaning her head against Mark's shoulder and squeezing his arm.
They're being so nice to Axel. Isn't that the sweetest?
I'm not sure Roz would agree with you, Mark whispered back, watching Daniel twirl Axel faster and faster. She looks upset.
They're just being playful, Leah said, tears glistening in her eyes. They don't know they insulted Roz. They're not trying to be mean.
The twins appeared to like their attic room. Mark had hired some local carpenters to add walls and finish the ceiling and carpet the floor and paint the room a comforting pastel blue-green. The eaves were low, so they all had to duck their heads. He and Roz had gone to Hildreth's, the old department store in Southampton, and bought soft-looking, comfortable, homey furniture for the room, and twin beds, which Mark placed side by side at the end of the attic, with the window looking down to the backyard. Now they were bouncing on their beds, giggling and raising their hands to the low ceiling. Watching them, Leah clapped her hands and let out a gleeful cheer.
They like the room, Mark.
She kissed his cheek. Her face was wet from her tears. Mark playfully tugged her hair.
I'm glad you're so happy. I am happy. I just know we're doing the right thing. I have such a strong feeling.
Elena stood behind them at the top of the attic stairs. She appeared to be studying the twins as if they were zoo specimens. Ira had chosen not to join them up here. Earlier in the week, when Mark broke the news to Elena that Leah was coming home with two orphaned boys, he was prepared for some kind of strong reaction. He didn't expect the shrug he received, and the muttered, whatever. Then she quickly added, as long as they stay out of my room and don't annoy my friends. That broke the tension. They're going to be a little strange at first, he warned her. They grew up on a tiny island, and they've been through a lot of tragedy. Elena rolled her eyes.
Dad, they're 12, right?
Of course they're going to be strange. They both laughed. He knew Elena would take it in stride, as she did everything. There would definitely be problems with her along the way. A teenager with three younger brothers in the house? No way there wouldn't be conflicts and fights and tears. But Elena could always be counted on to ride out any emotional wave. Ira was a different story. Take him to town for lunch and talk to him again? Tell him he had to pitch in and make this work? Tell him the family really needed his help? Mark knew he'd just roll his eyes and say, tell me something I don't know. Or worse, shut up, Dad, you're a jerk.
The twins were on their backs now, sprawled on the beds, luxuriating, sinking their heads into the pale green pillows. The room was pale blue and green, watercolors, soothing, and perhaps a reminder of their island home. Roz and Mark had put a lot of thought into all this while Leah was working to bring them off the island.
Let's show the boys the rest of the house, Leah said. Come on, get up, guys. We'll give you the grand tour.
Elena led the way downstairs. Her room was at the near end of the hall. She pushed the door open so the boys could take a glimpse. Above her bed, she had a framed poster of a girl gymnast, arms outstretched, flying high in the air. The closet door was covered with cutout photos of actors from the teen trauma TV shows she watched on her computer. Skirts and jeans and colorful tops were strewn all over the floor. Elena had a lot of good qualities, but she wasn't neat.
Nice room, Daniel said.
He pushed Samuel out of the doorway to get a better look. He pointed to the gymnast poster.
Is that you?
Elena rolled her eyes.
I wish.
Daniel started into the room, but Elena pushed a hand against his chest.
Two words to remember about my room, guys, she said.
They trained their blue eyes on her.
Two words?
Daniel asked.
Keep out, she said.
They both burst out laughing, as if she had made a hilarious joke. They laughed and shook their heads. Daniel raised his hand for Elena to slap him a high five.
You're funny, Elena,
he said. Samuel nodded agreement.
I'm serious, Elena insisted.
Let's move on with the tour, Mark said. He guided the boys to the next room, his office. He pointed out the desktop PC and his shelves of psychology books and the piece of moon rock on his desk. They took a quick glance but didn't seem at all interested. At the end of the hall, Elena said,
This is Ira's room.
The boys shoved each other as they eagerly trotted down the hall. Their two big sneakers made floppy sounds on the thick white carpet. They all burst into Ira's room. He lay sprawled on the bed, white earplugs in his ears, tapping away on a handheld game player. He didn't stop or look up as everyone invaded his room. "Ira?" Mark called. "Earth calling Ira. You have visitors." Ira tapped away, eyes on the game player. The twins walked around the room. Daniel strode to the two windows, pushed back the gray curtains, and gazed down at the front yard and the street. Afternoon sunlight poured in, making his blonde hair glow. Ira's room was bare and undecorated. The walls were plain white. On the narrow strip of wall between the windows, he had a small framed photograph of himself shaking hands with New York's governor after Ira had won a state citizenship essay contest. No other art or decoration in the room except for a small black stenciled octopus on the wall over his headboard. Mark didn't understand the octopus. Ira wasn't into sea life at all. In fact, he was timid and frightened around the ocean. A low bookshelf stood beside the long white counter that served as his desk. The closet door was closed. No dirty clothing on the floor. Ira didn't like clutter. He said keeping his room white and bare helped him concentrate on his homework, nothing to distract him. And he said it helped him sleep at night because there were no scary shadows. Samuel studied Ira's laptop. Photos of Ira and his friends on a class trip shuffled on the screen, Ira's screensaver. Daniel moved to the bed and sat down on the edge of the white quilt. Leah tugged the earplugs from Ira's ears. He sat up straight, blinking in surprise.
"Hey!
We're showing Daniel and Samuel the house," Leah said. "Do you want to tell them anything about your room?" Ira shook his head. "Not really."
"Awesome room," Samuel said. "Sunny. Like an island morning, you know?"
Leah leaned toward Mark.
"Don't you love their accent? Sometimes the way they talk, it's like poetry."
Daniel stepped up to Ira. His face turned serious.
"Can I have your room?"
A short laugh burst from Ira's throat.
"Huh? I don't think so."
Leah took a step toward Daniel.
"You like Ira's room, sweetheart? It's kind of bare, don't you think?"
Daniel didn't respond. He wrapped a hand around Ira's upper arm. His eyes locked intently on Ira's startled face.
"No, really,"
Daniel said, lowering his voice.
"Can I have your room?"
Ira raised his eyes to Mark, a pleading glance. Mark felt too stunned to react.
"I'll have your room," Daniel repeated, patting Ira's shoulder. "Okay."
Chapter 22.
"Mark, be reasonable. It's a perfect solution. I can't believe you're the one being the hard ass about this."
Leah's hands were clenched into tight fists over the kitchen table. Mark reached across the table to take her hand, but she snapped it out of his reach.
"I think I'm being the reasonable one," he said. "I think I am," Roz insisted.
She had put Axel down for his nap and joined them in the kitchen for what had started out as a quiet discussion and, much to Mark's dismay, quickly elevated into a shouting match. Ira was sulking in his room. Elena had taken the twins on a walking tour of the neighborhood to show them the bay. The boys were hopping up and down with excitement and had no idea of the conflict they had caused among the three adults. Leah took a breath and started another attempt to persuade Mark.
"You saw the look on Ira's face when the boys wanted his room. He was sick. He was about to have a fit."
"Of course he was," Mark started. "He had every right.
So then they saw the guest house and totally fell in love with it,"
Roz interrupted. Mark gazed at the dark stains on the front of her sweater. Axel was constantly using her sweater as a napkin.
"They don't know what they want," Mark said, turning to Leah. "How could they? It's like they stepped onto another planet."
"They know they want to live in the guest house," Leah said, jaw clenched, eyes about to tear up again.
"And Roz has agreed to move up to the attic."
"It's better for me anyway," Roz said. "I can keep a closer watch on everyone if I'm staying inside the house, and the attic is even roomier. And that way, Ira will keep his room," Leah said. "That's so important. I wouldn't do anything to hurt Ira's equilibrium."
"No, no way." Mark jumped to his feet, nearly knocking over his chair. "I built the attic room for the boys. They should be in the house. We don't know anything about them. We have to take special care of them. We can't have them living by themselves in their own house, even if it's in the backyard. That's crazy. Leah motioned with both hands for him to calm down. We want to make them happy, Mark. Mark felt his throat tighten. So you'll do anything they want? Is that your idea? Mark, stop shouting. Can't we sit here and have a calm discussion? Roz and I agree. Leave Roz out of this. We're the ones adopting these... Leave me out of it. I thought I was part of this family. God knows I'm the one spending most of the time with the kids. Mark patted her hand. Sorry, Roz. He turned to Leah. I'm not trying to be difficult. I see how happy you are. I see you already have strong feelings for these boys. You know I didn't want them here. But I'm going to try, Leah. I'm going to do everything I can. But you can't just give in to them. You can't give them everything they want. They don't know. You saw them pleading and pleading to live in the guest house. You saw how excited they were. I just think it's too soon to have them living on their own. We don't know how they're going to adapt. We don't know if we can trust them. We don't know. They won't be living on their own. No way. They'll be with us all the time. We'll... Leah gasped. Her eyes were over Mark's shoulders. Oh, no. Mark spun around and saw the twins huddled in the kitchen doorway. He felt his heart skip a beat. How long have you two been standing there? They both shrugged. Mark realized their eyes were on him. They were studying him. Had they overheard his true feelings? An awkward silence in the room. Then Leah stood up and flashed them a broad smile. Good news, boys. We had a vote here, and we voted 2-1. Roz and Axel are going to move to the attic, and you two get to stay in the guest house. She turned to Mark as if challenging him, but he knew when he was defeated. The twins cheered and did a funny, awkward tap dance of celebration, but their smiles faded quickly.
Only one thing, Daniel said softly. Samuel and I will take the guest house, only if you promise us one thing.
Mark narrowed his eyes at them. Now what? What is their next demand?
Only if Ira will come have sleepovers with us, Daniel said.
He saw Leah's chin quiver. The tears were about to flow again.
Are they angels? She whispered. Is that the sweetest thing?
Chapter 23 Leah grabbed the car keys and stuffed them in her jacket pocket. She herded the twins toward the back door.
Where's Ira? Ira's coming with us? Did you see him?
Before they could answer, Elena burst into the kitchen.
Have you seen my necklace? Did you see it anywhere?
Leah blinked. Necklace?
The one with the amethyst, you know, Grandma's necklace. It was on my dresser. I know, I left it on top of my dresser. Now I can't find it anywhere.
Maybe it fell off, sweetie, Leah suggested. Did you look underneath?
Duh, like, of course, like I'm not stupid.
Elena turned to the twins.
Did you see a necklace anywhere?
They both shook their heads.
Not me,
Daniel said.
We'll all search for it when we get back, Leah said. It didn't fly away. We'll find it. Get Ira for me, will you? I'm taking the twins shopping.
Leah drove the twins to the mall at Bridgehampton to buy them clothes. Ira had protested vehemently, but she forced him to accompany them and help select what kids at his school were wearing. The twins had been with them for 2 days, and he hadn't made a single attempt to be friendly. Now he sat glumly in the front seat beside her, his arms crossed, staring straight ahead through the windshield. In the Camry's back seat, the twins strained at their seatbelts, leaning out the windows to see the passing scenery.
I don't think they've ever been in a car before, she told Ira.
No response.
Come on, Ira, shape up. Look at that truck,
Daniel exclaimed.
Couldn't you fit a whole house in that truck?
Leah found it so touching, these 12-year-old boys seeing the world for the first time. She turned into a long parking aisle and stopped while a blue pickup backed out of a spot.
Be nice to them, she whispered to Ira. Be a help, okay? I'll buy you something special right now to cheer you up. What would you like? What can I buy you? A candy bar?
Leah bought all three of them big Milky Way bars. The twins ate them slowly, taking small bites, savoring them, dopey smiles on their faces as if they were drunk from the chocolate.
You had candy bars on the island, didn't you?
Leah asked. They both nodded.
I got a Snickers bar for my 10th birthday, Samuel said. It was my birthday too, Daniel said. We had to share it, don't you know?
Ira stared at them. Leah thought she caught a moment of empathy on his face. Having to share a candy bar was something Ira could feel strongly about. Still chewing on their giant candy bars, they followed Leah into TJ Maxx.
We need to get you boys at least 3 or 4 pairs of jeans to wear to school, Leah said.
Ira, what kind of jeans are the kids wearing these days?
Ira licked caramel off his lips.
I don't know.
Come on, Ira, Leah snapped. Help out here.
What kind of jeans?
He shrugged.
I'll know it when I see it.
Okay. Follow me. Boys' jeans are over there. She led them to the table stacked high with jeans. Only a few brands, but several styles and colors of denim. Did kids still wear cargo jeans? Most of the jeans in Ira's closet had a dozen pockets up and down the legs. She picked up a pair of straight-legged faded denims and held it against Samuel.
This looks about your size. Ira, do kids wear these?
Ira shrugged.
Maybe.
Leah searched through the pile and pulled out the same size. You boys will have to go try these on.
But wait, let's find a few more.
Daniel had a smear of chocolate on his chin.
Only one of us has to try them on, he said. We're the same size.
But don't you want to pick the ones you like? Leah asked. Samuel gazed up at her.
Do we really get more than one? We don't have to share.
Yes, you can each pick 2 or 3. The twins clapped their hands, careful not to drop their candy bars. They let out squeaks of joy.
It takes so little to make them happy, Leah thought. My kids take everything for granted.
She had a sudden memory flash, the twins stepping out of the red rain, looking so lost and forlorn. All around them, the devastation, everything down and destroyed, the mournful wails, the heavy, sour smell of death with each breath she took. She forced the images from her mind.
Here, go try this smaller size. Take these and try them all on.
She watched them race to the dressing room against the back wall.
They were so small for their age. Ira towered over them.
Ira hunched beside her, doing his best to look bored and unhappy.
What am I supposed to do?
Help me pick out some shorts for Axel.
Big whoop.
A short while later, success. Jeans were selected. T-shirts added to the pile. A couple of sweaters and long-sleeve shirts. It was April and the weather was still cool and damp.
Thank you, Mum. Thank you.
From Daniel. Then Samuel.
Thank you, Mum. I'm so happy. I never had new clothes, don't you know?
Do we love our new Mum?
Yes,
Daniel exclaimed. They both hugged her so tight she could barely breathe. Leah was almost overcome by their innocent, joyful gratitude. She carried the pile of clothing to the registers up front. She dumped everything on the counter. The three boys had wandered off. Where were they? She spotted them near the back wall. They were talking to another boy, a big hulk of a boy with a hard bulldog face. Leah recognized him from Ira's class. And there was his mother, Elaine Saltzman, ahead of Leah in the line. Elaine turned as if she knew Leah was thinking about her.
Leah?
Hi, Elaine. How are you?
Elaine swept her coppery hair behind one shoulder. She motioned toward the boys.
Do you have nephews visiting?
No, they're mine. I mean,
yours.
I'm adopting them. They grew up on that island off the Carolinas, Cap Lachat Noir. They lost their families in the hurricane, and I...
That's so wonderful of you, Leah. You just brought them here? You're adopting both of them? Do you know anything about them?
Not really, but look, they're sharing their candy bars with your son.
Look how sweet they are.
Samuel thought the boy was funny looking.
He looks like a big, mean dog. Is he really only 12?
The boy's head was enormous, his black hair uncombed, falling wildly over his square forehead. He had such a mean scowl on his face, and those little bulldog eyes. It didn't take long to see that Ira was afraid of him.
This is Derek, Ira whispered as the boy lumbered up to them. Be careful, he's really mean. Be nice to him.
Daniel chuckled. Samuel gave him a look, a warning, to be cool.
Don't be yourself, Daniel, he thought.
Hey, the big kid said. He had his eyes on Samuel's candy bar.
What's up? These are my new brothers,
Ira told him. His voice was suddenly trembly.
Like a warbling bird, Samuel thought.
Derek sneered. It made him look more like a pig than a bulldog.
Brothers? Since when? My parents are adopting them, Iris said. They live with us now.
Derek eyed the twins up and down, sizing them up.
How old are you?
12,
Daniel answered.
You don't look 12, you look 6.
Samuel felt a tremor of fear.
Please, don't be yourself, Daniel.
Derek leaned over them, trying to be intimidating.
What are your names, Babyface 1 and Babyface 2?
I'm Daniel, and he's Samuel. Or maybe I'm Samuel, and he's Daniel. Sometimes I forget.
Derek sneered again. You're a funny guy. He eyed them slowly.
No, I got a better name for you. You're Shrimp 1, and you're Shrimp 2.
I want to be Shrimp 2, Daniel said. Can I be Shrimp 2?
He had the sweetest smile on his face. Samuel had seen that crazy smile before. It meant he wasn't thinking sweet thoughts. Derek stretched out a porky hand to Daniel.
I'll finish your candy bar for you.
Samuel saw a hard jolt freeze Daniel's face, and then he caught the warning glance from Ira. Ira took a step back. He had his eyes on Daniel.
Just give it to him, Ira whispered.
Give it,
Derek ordered. He waved his hand in Daniel's face.
I'll finish it.
He turned to Samuel.
I'll finish yours, too. You had enough, right?
Right.
Samuel had his eyes on poor, frightened Ira. He handed his chocolate bar to Derek. Then he waited to see what Daniel would do. Daniel kept that sweet smile on his face, but his cheeks were kind of red. Samuel knew that look, too. He knew everything about Daniel. After all, he was almost him. Almost. But a little different. To Samuel's relief, Daniel stuffed his candy bar into the big porker's hand.
Enjoy it, Derek, he said. It's all yours.
Derek snickered. I will enjoy it, dude. He took a big bite and chewed with his mouth open so they could see the chocolate chunks smearing over his teeth.
Aren't you going to say thank you?
Daniel sounded hurt. Derek chewed noisily. Some chocolate juice ran down his chin. He swallowed.
Funny, he told Daniel. You are fucking funny. Next time, I want a whole bar.
Daniel's smile grew tighter, like a mask. Samuel felt his heart skip a beat.
Uh-oh.
He saw the new mom by the front windows, waving two big shopping bags at them. He tugged Daniel's arm.
We have to go. The new mom wants to leave.
Daniel nodded. He turned slowly and followed Samuel and Ira. Derek stood in place, a candy bar in each hand, stuffing his face. Ira pushed between them, his face all sweaty.
You have to be nice to Derek. He's a bad dude. He likes to hurt people, really. He beat up my friend Ethan behind the playground at school and almost broke his arm.
Doesn't he ever get caught?
Daniel asked.
I think the teachers are afraid of him, too, Ira said.
They caught up with Leah. The twins thanked her again. All the way home, they kept thanking her and discussing which shirts and jeans to wear on their first day of school.
That was so nice of you to share your candy with Derek, Leah said.
We like to share things, don't you know?
Daniel told her.
On the island, people have to share, Samuel added, because there isn't enough to go around.
He saw a sad smile form on Leah's face as she made the turn onto their block. As soon as they were home, the twins carried the shopping bags to their room in the guest house. Daniel closed the door behind them, making sure it clicked. Then he pushed the lock on the handle. He tossed the shopping bags onto the floor and turned to his twin.
What did you get?
Samuel pulled the red leather wallet from his back pocket. He handed it to Daniel. He could see the surprise on Daniel's face.
You got a woman's wallet? What's in it? Didn't have time to look. Someone dropped it on the dressing room floor.
Eyes flashing with excitement, Daniel poked through the wallet and pulled out a bunch of bills.
Yes, yes, these are 50, Sammy. $300. Oh, you did good.
He gave his brother a congratulatory face slap. Samuel giggled. He liked it when Daniel was pleased with him.
What did you get, Daniel?
Daniel reached deep into both of his pockets and began to pull out shiny things, chains with sparkly things attached.
necklaces, Samuel said.
Good boyo. So many sparkly necklaces. How did you get them?
Easy as salt clam pie, Sammy. The display case wasn't locked.
He swung the necklaces over his head, round and round, and did his funny Daniel dance.
I like sparkly things, he said. I'll put these with the necklace we found in Sister's room.
Chapter 24 Leah stirred the soup in the pot with a long wooden spoon. Behind her, the twins were already seated at the table, eager for their lunch. She smiled. So far, they had devoured everything she gave them. They seemed to like any food you put in front of them. Ira was such a picky eater. These boys were a pleasure. Is it soup yet? Mark entered the kitchen, scratching his stubbly face.
What a morning. The guy from the grant committee is coming here.
Leah turned from the stove.
Really?
Did he tell you how much they're giving you? Mark snickered. He stepped up behind Leah and kissed the back of her neck.
You're such an optimist.
She frowned.
Well, they have to give you at least part of the grant, right? They wouldn't turn you down flat.
Mark shrugged. Who knows? It's hard times. I know you don't read the newspaper.
I read it online. The guy's coming all the way out from the city?
He said he has a house out here.
Why didn't he tell you over the phone? He likes to give good news in person?
Your guess is as good as mine. He wouldn't even give me a hint. The soup made a sizzling sound. Leah spun around. She snapped the burner off before it boiled over the side of the pot.
Sit down. We're all having tomato soup. Homemade.
I sliced the tomatoes and everything this morning.
What a homemaker.
Mark tried to kiss her again, but she ducked her head as she lifted the soup pot from the stove.
Too bad you're going away again. Who will make us homemade soup?
Huh?
Going away? Mark, I'm going to the city tomorrow morning for one night. I'll be back late the following day. You're not going to make me feel guilty about a day and a half in the city, are you?
He backed away, raising both hands in surrender.
Just teasing. You know I'll miss you, even if it's only one night. Every minute is precious to me.
Shut up. You're not funny. Ira and Elena were away at friends' houses. She ladled the thick tomato soup into bowls, then joined Mark and the twins at the table. Daniel leaned his face to the bowl and took a long whiff.
Smells so good, Mum. Tangy as seagrass drying on the beach.
My brother is a poet, Samuel said.
I like the way you boys speak, Leah said, stirring her soup, watching the steam rise from the red liquid.
You have good vocabularies. There's no school on the island, Mum, Daniel said, but our parents, bless their souls, taught us well.
Bless their souls? He sounds like an old man. An old man, but a charming old man.
She wished Ira would pick up some of their charm and politeness. Maybe it would rub off on him. If only he would spend some time with his new brothers.
Wonderful soup, Mark said across the table from her.
He raised the pepper mill and ground a load of pepper into it. He always added pepper, no matter what the food was.
If I gave him a bowl of pepper, he'd add pepper.
Leah had learned not to be insulted when he re-seasoned her food that way. She raised a spoon of soup and blew on it.
Careful, it's very hot.
The soup bubbled on the spoon, red. So bright and red. Where had she seen that color before? She flicked the spoon hard and sent the soup flying over Mark's shoulder. Made a soft splash on the wall. The rain had come down so hard. Sheets of it, all blood red. Red as the tomato soup. Leah raised another spoonful, whipped her hand up, and sent the soup flying across the table onto the wall.
Hey, Leah!